You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield, and joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody. Good to see y'all.
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And IGN's community lead, Jada Griffin, is joining us today. Welcome to the show.
Hey, making my Scoop debut. I'm so excited to be here.
Welcome, Jada.
Yeah. Great to have you here. We've got a great show for you this week. We've got to talk about God of War Ragnarok, which we're all playing. IGN's review is out now. It's another 10 out of 10 from IGN. I know, Sam and Justin and I are all deep into it, and Jada is the only one of us who's actually finished the game, so definitely want to get some thoughts on that. We got to talk about PlayStation VR 2, which has a price tag that is a little bit higher than I think some of us were anticipating. And then we're going to look at an old game magazine, and I mean really old this week, folks. I've dug way, way back into the archives, much further back than we usually go. Should be pretty good. But first, God of War Ragnarok, 10 out of 10. Our reviewer Simon Cardi in our UK office loved it. Jada, since you're the one of us that's finished it, let's get your thoughts on it. What do you think of God of War Ragnarok?
Yeah, I think God of War Ragnarok just really took what God of War 2018 did, where God of War 2018 walked so Ragnarok could run. And you know, I'm going to bring in the cliche. Why not? The Ragnarok is just, it took everything up to the next level. Honestly, if I was reviewing it, I would have fought to break the 10 scale because I loved it so much. The character development, the combats evolve, they subvert your expectations. There's just so much good stuff in this game, and it did a lot of things I was hoping it would do and did a lot of things I wasn't expecting, and I was very happy that it did. So I'm very excited for more people to get their hands on it and like see all their experiences when it comes to this, because there's just so many great moments from so many characters. I cried a couple times. I don't know if you guys have cried yet at wherever you are in your gameplay. But
I mean, like,
I cried
1 minute into the game, there's a pretty rough scene involving animals that like always gets me. I can't stand bad things happening to animals.
Oh, I know that one. I don't think that one made me cry, but I was definitely misty eyed for that one. It was touching.
Yeah, I should point out for people out there looking forward to playing it, we're not going to spoil anything about the game here. So you can feel free to continue listening without worrying about having anything spoiled for you. This is not a spoiler cast. It sounds like it was an 11 out of 10 off the charts, Jada. Jada, was there anything you were disappointed with?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a couple little gripes. One of the things was I'm a completionist when I play my games. So, like, I like to clear out areas as I go. Now, God of War 2018, there was some areas you had to backtrack before you could get certain things. But this one does it a lot more. And the fact that some of these objectives aren't available until you complete the campaign, and they show up on your objective list, it sent me kind of running in circles for probably 2 or 3 hours a day, because I was just like, I know there's something over here. There's got to be something in this area. It says there's an undiscoverable thing. Let me discover it. And then it falls into the folly of, and I'm sure you guys will share this gripe, it falls in the folly of some of the other big PlayStation franchises when you have narration from the characters themselves. The puzzle solving, where people automatically kind of like, hey, I bet we could solve it if we just throw your axe up there.
Sometimes it's even like, no, how about a little bit to the left? I think a little bit more to the left. You're like, oh, that's very specific to help me solve this puzzle. Why didn't you just solve the puzzle for me?
Just give me a button to press as like Atreus solves puzzle. I think the only other thing was there's one voice line that you will all hear and will be burned into the back of your brain. And I literally do mean burned, because anytime Atreus gets caught on fire, Atreus or Mimir will say something along the lines of, you're on fire, but don't worry, it will pass. Or you probably already know this, but you're on fire. And I'm just like, thank you. and you know, that may be good for, you know, I didn't even think about it. It could be an accessibility
stash.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's an Aloy stash quote. But you know what? Something like being on fire, that could be a accessibility thing in that's hidden in a narrative, because if somebody is kind of, doesn't have the best sight, they may not notice that they're on fire. And so like knowing that by a character telling them, that could be why they have it that way. So I'm hoping that's the reason why it's said every single time you're on fire, and you're on fire a lot in this game. There's a lot of fireballs.
Also the reason why we can't have smell-o-vision in games, because that would just be terrible.
They tried that in the 90s. That was their great promise of our gaming future. We're going to be able to smell
Kratos
our video
on
games.
Fire smell. I bet it smells like, I don't know, maybe like some wars or something.
I mean, it's you know, he wears bear pelt, apparently, according to the new like trailer with Ben Stiller. It's bear pelt, so.
Yeah, so I'm like 16 hours into it now, and I said last week I was loving it. I'm still loving it. What I can say now is that I feel like from what we've talked about with Justin and Sam, I think we're all kind of on the same page here. Love the game. It's operating on a level that most video games are not. It's just the highest tier of AAA polish and production. I think it hits me a little bit softer than God of War 2018, just because that was like a revelation. It was like a soft reboot of the franchise. Very, very different and fresh for the God of War franchise. And Ragnarok is a continuation of that. It's the second half of this duology. So it just feels very, you know, it feels very much like God of War 2018, which isn't bad at all, but it sort of softens. It's not like me playing this now. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I don't know, Justin, do you have sort of a similar feeling?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely like, that's why this game is going to be, you know, maybe a little bit harder to talk about, or I anticipate the discourse is going to be not necessarily mixed. Like, I think it's a better game, right? Like, I think the combat is more polished. I think it's beautiful. I think the narrative is a little bit more mature and nuanced. I think the acting from everyone, like, you know, they brought their A game, and the new cast members are really incredible too. So it's better. Like, if you were to go, you know, feature by feature and tick the boxes, it's like, yep, there's improvements and refinements and optimizations across the board, but it doesn't feel as new or fresh, which I already can tell people that love Ragnarok and that consider it their game of the year. Like, it's a sequel. It's not supposed to, it doesn't need to. And they're right. They're completely right about that. But God of War 2018 was exactly as you said, Damon, it was so revelatory, and you know, I'd never played anything that felt like that. Like nobody's talking about the continuous camera in this one, where that's all anybody talked about with 2018, right? Yeah. It's just become kind of expected, you know, it's just part of like, yeah, well, that's just what these modern God of War games are. And so, you know, it's better. Like, you know, it deserves its 10 out of 10s that it got from us and everyone else in the press. But to me, God of War, like, I just couldn't gush about how amazing it was. And with Ragnarok, I feel like it's sort of like, it's just a little bit more expected. The bar was set so high to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And Sam, what do you think?
I was going to say, we talked about that on Beyond this week. And it was just kind of about how 2018 had those higher highs, like finding those blades of chaos was such a big and momentous moment. And like Ragnarok just doesn't have a moment that like peaks at that level. But it has so many other levels that are higher than the other one. It's also how I kind of felt about it. But I'm yeah. definitely want to hear Sam's take, because I know I've seen some Slack messages from Sam about it, and I want to hear it in person.
Well, no, it's all good. So much of what I can say about this game, I can't really say on this show. So it's like we'll have to hold off. Mm. But first of all, where is it? I don't keep up on news of God of War as much as other games. What do we know about this being part of a duology, as you said? Like, this is the end of some sort of storytelling in this, or is it going to a different studio? Like, how do we know that? What do you
it's mean? The end of the Norse. Like, they're ending this current storyline with this game.
It's not a trilogy. Like,
why would they tell us that? I don't see why a company would tell us that.
He told us that, I think it was Corey Barlog said it, but it was because he wants this series to be done. This era to be done in a normal period of time, because if they stretched it out to a trilogy, it would have been another 5 years. So it would have been a story told over 15 years, basically.
Okay. I remember those quotes.
Yes.
Now.
And so he didn't want the story to kind of lag on when it felt just like they could tell what they needed to tell in two instead of stretching it out to three.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along those lines.
No, that makes sense. I think this game feels like it has a lot of filler in it, and that it's stretched to maybe complete exactly what you're talking about. In fact, everybody here mentioned something. I was like, well, Beto's like, I don't like backtracking too much, you know, like there's things like that, which I think break the kind of taut flow of the first game, which is just like, you're going through this story and it doesn't let up. And when it lets up, it feels really revelatory. This game, when it lets up, it feels boring and it goes on for a long time. And I don't really like those parts. There's background character development happening in those parts, which is nice. But this game isn't really made for me. Like, I like exploration. I like open worlds. I like secrets. And these games don't provide that. And this game takes that out even more. It solves puzzles for you. It brings the same chest. You're seeing one right now, the same puzzles for those chests back again. And they're all in just long corridors. And if they're not in corridors, they're in kind of a janky, explorable area like Uncharted. And so my big issue with this game, Uncharted, and Last of Us is that they're becoming the same game. And that bums me out. Even though you do stealth in Last of Us and not great shooting in Uncharted, and fantastic combat in God of War, that doesn't make it any different than those games. It's a story-driven action game. And I feel they're becoming too samey. It's like, it's all like, it was special the first time that the characters cracked jokes to each other in The Last of Us. And then in God of War, it was touching. And this game, it just feels like they're playing the same cards as before. It seems like it's by the motions. It's like, none of the Marvel movies feel that way to me, for example. They can be bad, they can be good, but like, a big accusation of them is that they're formulaic. But they don't feel that way. They definitely are, but they don't feel that way. And this is becoming formulaic. And what bothers me about formula in games that are famous for storytelling is when I can see the cracks and I can see the facades and I can see like, oh, they're trying to pull the heartstrings now. And there's a point in the very beginning of the game, which tries to pull your heartstrings about a minute in. And it doesn't stop from there. There's some cheap shots like that. And I just notice it more. And I didn't notice it as much in God of War. Now, in God of War, I didn't like it. I thought it was just like a little bit. I don't think father-son narratives are that interesting to me. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. I just don't think they're that interesting. And this game, at least it's not just that. There's more things than that. So those are my criticisms. But what I'll say, and I have a lot more, but what I'll say about this game is that the dialogue is hilarious and it's really well done. Yeah. There's so much of it that you're going to like some of it. And then I also say, everybody that likes the series, I don't want to yuck your yum. You're going to love this game. It's going to be awesome. Like, you're going to have the best time with it. And just because this game is not like tailor made for me doesn't mean it should be. This game should exist in this form for some people. But I think if you can't see those flaws and, you know, then the game is appealing to you in a way that it doesn't appeal to me, that covers them up. Because to me, they're just too apparent.
And, you know, I think that's a beautiful thing when it comes to just like our reviews in just general. Like, reviews are a person's opinion. Like, you're not wrong. You're not necessarily right. Like, everybody is going to experience something differently based on their upbringing, based on just like what they've enjoyed in the past. Like, that's, you know, it's just kind of the nature of reviews. Like, you know, Sam, obviously you're not as big into it as I was. And I connected with a lot of those storylines that you didn't. And that's totally fine. And that's just, that's the beauty of gaming. There's so many games out there for us to play. Like, there's no reason to be like, to fight over like, no, you're wrong over this one. Like, is we, like, we just enjoy the games you like.
Yeah,
I agree.
I was just gonna say, there's a lot of us at IGN that have been playing it, and there seem to be two camps. No one's like really down on it. Everyone is like over the moon about it. And then there's some of us, like myself and Sam and Justin, they're like, this game is great. I have a couple, you know, that comes with a little bit of an asterisk, but the game is great. Like Sam said, in my opinion, there's a segment of this game about 10 hours in, 12 hours in, where all the wind is taken out of the game's sails, all the forward momentum is lost, and you go off on this sort of side excursion, and it's really boring, and it goes on for seemingly forever. And that was the first part that hit me. It's like, I don't think there was a segment like this in the first game. And that's the only like sort of indication to me that maybe this is being stretched out a little too much.
You know, there's the one of the other Uncharted type things this game does. And that area that you're talking about is not as much like this, but the area right before it is it presents you with a tiny open world, like a little arena. So Last of Us Part II did this. Uncharted famously did it in 4 and then in Lost Legacy, where you basically have a vehicle and you can drive around and like kind of do stuff. And I don't get it. I like you just make your game corridors with fights if you're going to make it. Like, I don't understand those sequences. That they really break the game for me, and they make me want the game that it's not, which is like, we'll do this the size of Elden Ring, you know, like that would be really cool. But, you know, like, I don't like those teases of open worlds anymore. I used to be like, oh, what, like that's going to be expanded in the next game. But now I know it's just a trick. It's just like the backtracking. It's like, it's to make it be bigger and feel bigger. And some people want games to be built bigger that way. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work. That doesn't stretch the game out in any interesting way for me. It's like butter over too much bread.
Sam, you don't like hearing Mimir tell you all the stories as you just kind of like traverse around.
Mimir should have a podcast.
I 100% agree. We should get Mimir on Scoop. We should just get him on here on Scoop.
That'd be great, actually.
We should tell some of these stories in another format, maybe, and not in a video game.
Mimir is great. Both Brock and Sindri the dwarves are back, and I think they're even better in this game than they were in the 100%.
They're so funny. Again, writing is... The dialogue is like so funny and so well composed. And, you know, sometimes you pick up a little historical, you get this game as its version of emails, where you pick up something and you're like, oh, I'm going to read about this. And it's always interesting because the Norse mythology, like comparing the existing Norse mythology to the God of War Norse mythology is like comparing, you know, Thor movies or comics to existing Norse mythology. Like, those are interesting reflections of each other. And, you know, the game kind of breaks the fourth wall with that a little bit by talking about how myths and fate are not necessarily set in stone. And, you know, I think that's really interesting. I think that's the most clever thing about this game.
It is very clever. Go ahead, Jason.
I mean, I just like the game is held to such a high standard of like, I think I talked about this on the show last week where like, the games have struggled over the last 2 or 3 years to present that kind of like highly polished, like any kind of rough edges filed away. Like, I feel like we got more of that last gen and, you know, either because of COVID or whatever, like, you know, games like Cyberpunk or, you know, Elden Ring. And I love Cyberpunk, as is well documented on this show, but like, they're not, like, they have these rough parts to them, right? They have these sort of unpolished elements to them. And God of War is the first game I played in a long time that, like, doesn't have any of that. Like, ultra smooth, ultra, like, all the combat always feels great, which is, like, we've come to expect it because it's a sequel to a Game of the Year winner. But it is probably worth vocalizing that, like, this game at its worst, at its absolute worst, is, like, you know, is still very good. And then it's great at its best. It only kind of like goes up from there. So like the standard that it's setting for itself and that Sony Santa Monica has set for themselves is just, it's almost unbelievable. How area after area, like the game does have these semi-open areas, but it also has, I'm trying to be vague and not spoiler it here, but it has like levels. It has these areas that you go into and you're going to be there for a couple hours and you're going to move on to the next one. And they never repeat, like, you know, a room or dialogue or, you know, they never like, it all seems bespoke and handcrafted. And like throughout the whole game, I'm like, how do they do this? And like, you know, that doesn't absolve them of criticism for like, I agree. I think this game's probably a little too long. Like it's not, the storyline's not propulsive enough. Like I feel like they could get to the point a little bit faster. So, you know, like that's valid. Like that's a valid opinion to have, but like, you know, that doesn't take away from kind of the monumental achievement and just kind of like art and interactive design. Like it feels like a throwback to like those sorts of like ultra polished games that like, you know, we kind of stopped getting over the last 5 years or so.
Like, that's what Call of Duty campaigns were in like at like the turn of the century. Yeah.
You know? Like Spielberg level. You know, or like Last of Us 2 might be the last game of that example. Like, you know, love it or hate it, there's no denying that it's just completely immaculate in what it's trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I think
I have a question for Jada. Yes. So you're very good at this game, and I've been working with you and others on the guide. And just like getting like feedback to help craft the guide. So like when you upgrade in this game, there's mm-hmm. XP to like get new skills, and then there's weapons and armor, which you can mm-hmm. get crafting stuff for.
Yeah.
Does that play into do you use those a lot when you're trying to, you know, play on a very difficult mode?
So
does that really matter to you?
Oh, 100%. That type of stuff, like the hardest part of a God of War difficulty run is the first like 6 to 10 hours. That is the hardest part of the game, I would say. There's some bosses later on that are that rival that, like the end game stuff and post game stuff is really tough as well. But the earliest parts of the game are the hardest part because you just don't have the tools at your disposal. You don't have all your weapons. You don't have all your runic attacks. You don't have all the abilities. You don't have the stats. You don't have the HP to take as many hits as you might later in the game. You know, early in the game, like on God of War difficulty, it's 2 or 3 hits and you're down. Like, and that's wow. that's you're back to checkpoint. So like it that's the toughest part. And so like for me playing on this difficulty, it's all about finding the right armor set that kind of maximizes your potential going through. And for this one, it's not really a spoiler. There's an armor called Lunda's armor it's part of a main story that you'll like, not main story, but like a dialogue when you meet a character. And it poisons the enemies, which weakens them, which makes it more manageable as you go through. And I pretty much rode that armor all the way till the post game. Just maximizing that because being able to bring enemies down that were, one or two levels that were 2 or 3 levels higher than me, just made it more manageable for me to take less damage if I missed a parry or, you know, drop their health bar before I even needed to parry sometimes. So like that type of stuff is very important.
I think that's really key. Like listen to that description, because when you play a normal, you don't have to care about any of that.
Nope.
Like game, like you'll die, but when you die, and this happens on hard difficulties too, it just refills your health midway through the fight. So this game does not present any sort of, you know, crazy combat challenges, at least on normal.
Yeah.
And I, for the most part, I'm just like, why would I go out of my way to grind for armor or upgrade armor? Like basically every once in a while, you open a chest with stronger armor or stronger shields or whatever. And like, they all have differences and they're all really interesting, but like meaningfully in the way I'm playing combat and trying to work on this game, I'm like, oh, well, I don't really care. Like, why am I going out of my way to get all this extra stuff? And I will augment that criticism with the XP that I'm getting right now. I know there's going to be different weapons or skills later I want to upgrade. So I'm kind of being conservative with upgrading that. But also when I look at the skill trees, it's like every single thing you unlock is like a new button combination. And like, I'm not playing Street Fighter here. Like, I don't want that. I want to get a style and a parry system that works for me and then add to that and build on it. But instead it's like, well, now if you roll the left trigger at the same time as the right trigger and hold A, but you do have to tap circle at the same time, it's like you'll actually send a fireball out of your whip while you do your attack. It's like, I don't want that. That's not interesting additional combat to me. It's like, that's a brain teaser.
So one thing I will say to counterpoint that is that when you go in the skill tree, after you've bought a skill, you are able to disable specific skills. So if you find you're like two or three, if you have 2 or 3 moves that are your bread and butter, then you can disable all the rest and just use those, which is great. And there's no move.
Sorry, XP.
There's no moves that really like are better. Like just be like, oh, if you're not using this move, you're not going to be able to finish game. There's no moves like that. You can literally, based on your play style, you can make those moves work. And that also plays into the gear when you get like further. Like now I'm in the post game. I'm building all these different builds. I have a build right now to where every time I, you know, when you get that R3 execution move, if I do that, I get a rage burst, I get a blessing of cooldown, and I get a gift of strength. So it increases, you know, decreases cooldown, boosts my damage for like 10 seconds, and also fills my rage meter. So there's like all types of cool things you can do with the gear once you get like further in. But I think they didn't do the greatest job when it comes to making those useful earlier on to where you would want to do that, at least on the God of War difficulty. Like anytime I tried swapping armors off of Lundas, I just didn't feel like I was getting as much value. So I hope, you know, maybe there's some balance patching they can do to kind of like finagle the stats and stuff. But I stuck with Lundas all the way through from beginning to end. And I
just think hard mode might be more satisfying for people that really want to focus on the complexity of the game. And then one set of stuff that I did like about combat is that I really like how this game brought back that juggling and kind of like mm-hmm. knocking things into the air and doing damage that way. There's no like skill tree that elaborates on that. So that's a little disappointing. Like that would be an example of like, oh, I would totally upgrade that and like make sure I could do more hits in the air. Like that would be a cool one. But there's also that, you know, he starts with a kick. You can get power-ups that are like that kick for the weapons, which are fun too, because you can sling enemies off ledges. And like that's really fun to figure out and do. I like that in any game. What, remember in Assassin's Creed in Odyssey.
It was
a way to kind of cheese enemies that were like a little higher level than you, kicking them.
Yeah.
Yep, kick them off.
And you can kick people against a wall too, but the game's not very clear about walls and ledges. I'll throw that in there.
There is some weird collisions. There's some weird collisions where it's like, I kicked this person to a wall. They just kind of bounced off instead of shattering like they should have. So I totally hear
when
you
it
on
works,
that.
It's
should have shattered. Okay. Anyway, God of War Ragnarok. It's going to be out for us all of Scoop Nation very soon. The game is great. It's amazing. Anyone who's been looking forward to it, like I said last week, you're not going to be disappointed.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
I'm still enjoying the game 16 hours in, and I'm taking my time with it. I'm not trying to run through. For the most part, I love just sort of exploring and being in that world. Although I really want to know what Scoop Nation thinks about that this point, about 10 or 12 hours in, when it goes off on this this sort of side excursion and you stay there for a little bit too long, I think.
I'll give them one word to think about so they know what you're talking about.
Okay. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Yak.
I knew that was going to be the word.
Yak.
let's move on, sticking in the world of PlayStation. PlayStation VR 2, we know when it's coming. We know how much it's going to cost. February 22nd, 2023 is when it's out. $550. $50 more than the PlayStation 5 costs, at least in the territories where the price of the PS5 was not increased by $50. I don't know where to begin. I think this all but assures PSVR 2 will see the same single-digit attach rate that PSVR 1 did.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I don't know about you, Damon, but I don't like it.
I think it's. Damon, I mean,
can you explain what attach rate is for the listeners, real quick?
The percent of people who bought. So PSVR 1 has a 5% attach rate. That means 5% of people who bought a PS4 also bought a PSVR. Just pretty low, even though, you know, I don't 5% of what 125 million maybe or whatever that PS4 is sold. Nothing to sneeze at, but it's a small percentage of the, you know, the potential audience for the device. So I would imagine Sony would be wanting to get that number up for PSVR 2, something that can't be cheap to for, you know, research and development, cheap to manufacture, obviously. And I see a lot of comments saying that for the specs and compared to other high-end VR units, that price seems about right. Sure, but the price is more important than the specs, like for most people. And like the fact that it costs more than the console, that what, it turns the console into the accessory and now PSVR 2 is the main device. Like that's going to be a mental hurdle that's going to be too hard for many people to get over.
It's too much. It's too much because they're trying to build an ecosystem along with it, right? Yeah. And so it all but assures. So, you know, you have this PS5 install base that's already not as large as they would like it to be because they're, you know, they're having trouble getting PS5s onto store shelves. Yeah. And it ensures that only a portion, you know, look, whether it's 5% or 10% or, you know, let's say it's a home run, like a Grand Slam home run, and it's 25%, 30% of PS5 owners get a PSVR. Like that is not enough owners to entice third-party developers to come in and make flagship VR products. So, you know, like you can see this domino effect of how is this thing a success 3 years from now or 5 years from now? Not enough people are going to own it to get, you know, the big VR developers on board. It's not going to justify the expense of making big AAA VR. And then people like me that like, you know, I would maybe be willing, like, you know, I spent $500 on a PS5. I'm willing to spend $500 on cool cutting edge next gen tech. But like, you have to have faith in it, right? You have to believe that it's going to be around and be supported for a long enough period of time. So I think it's I think it's a mistake. It doesn't come with, you know, if you're watching the show, you're seeing the sort of horizon call of the mountain. It doesn't even come with that. So
there, you know, I think there is a bundle, the first 600 that comes with the Horizon, but okay, I mean, that's, still extra. It's still extra money. Yeah. That's
what I mean. It's like, it's $550, but not really. It's $550 plus more if you want to have anything to do with it. So yeah. I don't know. I don't like it.
I'm a big VR person. I love VR. You know, I play super hot and I've rolled around to dodge bullets in super hot in VR. Like, but like, it's just, I want this PSVR too, but man, that price tag, like you said, the specs, you know, aren't as important as the price, Damon. Like, it's just like, yes, this is probably going to be one of the better VR headsets out there, but also what are the games? Like, I need to see the proper software. They did a blog post, PlayStation did a blog post and they announced like 12 games, including Horizon. And I didn't see a buy or must play on out of any of those other than Horizon. Like, and I'm not going to drop $600 for one game for when it comes to a peripheral. Like, yes, people will buy a console. Like, people have bought PlayStations to play Spider-Man back in the day because they love Spider-Man. And that is enough to sate them. And they will play other stuff that they can get at a smaller investment. But like, the PSVR 2, like, we're now looking at $1,100, you know, dollars in the US, more if in other territories. Like, I don't even want to know what the price is in other territories because we know it just jumps up everywhere else. So like, it's just, I don't know. I think maybe Sony's jumping the gun a little too soon on it. Like, I feel like they might have waited a year to get a bigger stable of games and drop with like 20, 30 games right off the bat and had some time for technology to like maybe come down a little bit in price and sell it for $400, $450, you know, maybe around the price of the digital PS5 at most expensive. But man, like it's just, it's rough.
They could have softened the blow of the price if they had announced Half-Life Alyx. But
that's not announced. Exactly.
It's a bunch of these 11 games is like Crossfire, The Light Brigade, Cosmonius High, Tentacular, Pistol Whip. It's like it's just words that don't mean anything to anyone.
It's like they almost sound like the Wii shovelware that we used to get back on the Wii. You know what I mean? And and that's no disrespect to these developers. I'm sure that they're, you know, doing their best to make these great cutting edge games in VR. It's not easy to make a game in VR. It's not easy to make a game in general. But like, there's no big name that we need to play in this list. And I looked through a lot of them. A lot of them are updated versions, like newer versions. They're enhanced versions. So it's the same game that people have already been playing, just with more content. Like, are you going to spend $600 to play Cities VR? Like, I don't think anybody's doing that other than the one person who has like 12,000 hours in Cities. Like, to begin with, like maybe that person is, but I don't know.
Sam, what do you think of this price?
I mean, all VR is expensive. I'm tired of it. I'm really like the Oculus, or what is it called now? The Meta Quest 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's like, you know, that's like their reasonable entry level. I've played one of those. They're totally adequate. I don't know why anybody would get anything else at this point. If you have a nice PC or whatever, then you can upgrade and get, you know, really good VR and maybe you want quality, but like that, those two options already make it so, you know, PlayStation had to compete with one of those, and they're not going to have the best. They're not going to have the cheapest. They're not going to have a game library that's like anybody else's. It's just, I don't know. Like it's just kind of dead in the water. The game list is really important. What would have been really cool is if at least if, you know, any of us here wrote a top 25 VR games, that PlayStation would have 20, you know, and then they would announce that and be like, oh, this is a good reason to start playing VR. But right now it's not. You can get a Meta, and if you already have a PC, you can play Half-Life Alyx with the Quest 2. You can. Yeah. So it's like,
I think that there's a corollary, like, and I'm going to go somewhere with this, I promise. But like in the history of handheld games, the more inexpensive, cheaper console always won. Like the Game Boy beat the Game Gear, and then the DS beat the PSP. Mm-hmm. And like, I think there's something to that when it comes to VR. Like the future of VR is the Quest 2, because it doesn't have cables and it's less expensive. It's a standalone console. And so, you know, there's a market for ultra high end VR, which is incredible, by the way. Like, I do want to point out that like you can't do it justice by watching pictures of it and videos of it. Like,
you're right.
It's unbelievable to have that stuff on your face, but as unbelievable as that is, like, it's not being able to pop something on your head and there's no cables and you're just in it and you can go. That's the future of VR. Like, that's the baseline of like, you need to make that experience higher end and more AAA. Instead of trying to tether it to, you know, your PS5 supercomputer or your PC-based supercomputer. Like, it's not the future of VR going mainstream. Like, the Oculus Quest 2, I mean, they raised the price on it, which just blunted any kind of momentum they had. Like, that thing was an unbelievable bestseller 2 years or 3 years ago, whenever they would run, like, Black Friday deals and stuff. Like, there's Quest 2s. Like, my sister has a Quest 2, right? Like, she has a Wii and a Quest 2. Like, that console was getting to, like, that level. And, you know, I'm a little bit surprised.
How much was the price increase?
It went up $100.
$100. So it's $400 now.
And so, like, that, and I don't know, like, they came out with the Quest Pro. Like, I don't know if they're making a Quest 3. Like, I hope so.
They are.
That's what VR needs to be. And I think the PS5, as you put it, Sam, is getting a little bit middled. You know, it's not the fanciest and it's not the cheapest, most accessible. So it exists in this weird middle ground.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know what Sony's like measure of success is or their projections, but I don't see it.
Do you think there's like a participation in, you know, metaverse stuff that's tripping up so many companies right now that's got Sony like just really like they just think it's like an investment in a future that I think a lot of us here are skeptical about.
Yeah. Well, and they may very well be right about that, right? Like, you know, if VR on a long enough timeline is going to be the future, they want to be there and be established and have that talent. But like as a platform, like, you know, I bought $500 for a PS5, not because of the PS5 games I wanted to play in fall 2020, but because I had faith and confidence as a consumer that like I was going to get value out of it over the next 5 years. And like, boy, they have a lot of work to do on PSVR to sort of convince me that that's going to be the case for, you know, for this add-on.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. It's out in February. I don't know. Maybe they can sort of beef up that game library for them. I know they're supposed to have 20 games to launch. They should at least have Super Hot for PS5.
Yes.
Super please. Hot.
Okay. We've been talking about the most cutting edge video game that's about to hit the market right now. We've been talking about this cutting edge new technology in PSVR 2 that's coming next year. Let's turn the clocks back to the most cutting-edge video games of November 1982. We have the premiere issue of Electronic Fun with computers and games. I don't know how long this magazine lasted. This is the premiere issue. It's a pretty good one, though. And their cover story is Hollywood Video Game Explosion, Raiders, E.T., Star Wars, Star Trek. So even back then, early 80s, video game movies were a big deal. And I love what they do. Sam, I think you'll appreciate this. They've got Indiana Jones, Princess Leia, and Spock on the cover, but they're like their versions of like pixel art, which includes all, they're like scan lines, right? Because yeah. That's what's like, that's how they saw video games back then, not this like crystal clear pixel art, right?
Notice in the background too that there's a monitor, but it's a vertical monitor like you'd see in an arcade game like Pac-Man. That means like it's a TV turned on its side. And then the there's a little, I believe, a keyboard in front of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is like the coolest thing ever. I would love a vertical monitor CRT computer from 1982. That's just the coolest idea ever.
So that Seth Macy owns one.
A Vectrex is kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was like that. So what was that right now? The Atari VCS was like the still like the leading console. There were some personal computers at the time, but like I don't think even the 5200 was out. The 7800 was not out. ColecoVision was out. Television was out. And then I think the Vectrex is almost out.
This magazine came out like as the video game industry was crashing.
That's another very interesting thing I wanted to bring up. Yes. The next year, this E.T. on the cover of this of this issue, E.T. would come out and the home video game industry in America would officially crash. They have no idea. So maybe they didn't make it very long into Electronic Fun with computers and games. The first is an ad for M Network, which is games, I guess, for the 2600.
Wow.
And it's a baseball game. It says, our graphics don't move. They perform and are challenging.
This was such like a 90s ad. I love how.
I know. It's like a TV. It's like being blasted off the shelf by the power of the game, knocking over the vase. Yeah. M Network. I don't know the M Network, that developer of Atari VCS.
It says Mattel.
Yeah, it's that's like Mattel. Mattel
Electronics. Yeah. They don't even like name any games here. It's just like the library of M Network games. So go check it out. I don't know. That's they got their table of contents here. Some kind of Ultravision ad. We challenge you. Ultravision, the latest in arcade quality video games, challenges the competition to match our consumer satisfaction guarantee. Consider yourself by playing Condor Attack and Karate again. Mm-hmm. But oh, in the bottom it says Ultravision Video Arcade System. So I guess this was a competitor.
It was to what?
I mean, to they say they name Atari and VCS are trademarks of Atari down at the bottom. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe the Ultravision never actually came out. Although Condor Attack,
the depiction of the Ultravision is a computer screen type console, but there's no keyboard. There's two notches for joysticks that you can pull out.
Yeah.
This is insane. So first of all, it says that their video arcade system cartridges work with multiple different consoles.
Yeah.
They're saying it works with the Ultravision, the Atari VCS, the Sears Telegame system. And they're saying if you didn't like it, you could just trade in your game for another cart.
So
what could go wrong?
That's the one format future, Justin. We moved past it
there
so
it is.
Quickly.
Yeah.
The one console future.
They have a letter from the editors, not singular. A new video game magazine? Why? The home computer isn't in widespread use yet, but it will be soon. Microprocessor-based video games are the door openers. As you game players are becoming more proficient and seeking greater challenges, you are demanding more complex and sophisticated hardware. Enter the home computer. with improved color graphics and other new technology that's coming, the possibilities for gaming are mind-boggling. We've looked into our crystal ball and decided the future is close enough to give you the best of both worlds today. With more than a half dozen video games magazines already on the newsstands, we understand clearly that we have to give you a better product than any of the others. If you read through this magazine, you'll see we've done it. We've also created the most accessible, amusing, literate, yet easy to read magazine about home computers available anywhere. Sam, would you say that's a good way to describe IGN? Literate but yet easy to read.
That's really funny. Look at the little signature bar there with the Atari japes. I love the AT-AT there.
And Mega Mania. And
Klingon Warbird, I think.
Ship, yeah.
Do you think, by the way, the senior editor in the masthead is Randy Hacker? Do you think that's a real name or is that a pen name?
I hope so.
Randy with an I, too.
And the managing editor is Dan Gutman. Maybe the inspiration for Gutsman.
Top one Richard Extract?
It is Richard Extract. I don't know. The art director is just a single name, Orit.
Did aliens come up with these human names? They usually have a common word like extract in them.
We were sabotaged by E.T. by actual aliens video game.
There's an ad for another magazine called Video Review, and it says the only video magazine you'll ever need. And the cover story is, should you buy projection TV now? 1982. Was that the time to buy projection TV?
They did make games look a lot bigger.
Let's see. Even though this is their premiere issue, somehow they have letters to the editor.
Where do these letters come from?
Yeah. I don't know how this. All they have.
They had a good community person working for them.
Yeah.
Got that stuff early.
Mm-hmm. All I ever hear about are Atari and Intellivision. Why doesn't the video game press give more coverage to Odyssey, Emerson, Fairchild, and other lesser-known systems?
Cool.
Why computers? Yours is the first video game magazine to stress the importance of home computers. Why? I don't have a computer, and none of my friends do either.
How do you know that, Colette? You're in the first issue. It's driving me insane.
It's great.
Bruce wrote in to say, I hate adventure games. I don't see why anyone would want to spend so much time looking for stupid keys and treasures and so forth when they could be playing an exciting game like Defender. Are you going to do a lot on adventure games?
Yeah, debate continues in 2022. Yep,
that depends on you. Kill the Arcade. Sue writes in to say, every day I read an article in the paper about this community or that community banning video game arcades. Where do you people stand? What does she mean by you people? Sounds so aggressive. And they stand right in front of the machine with our hands on the joystick.
Adorable. Cool.
An ad for US games, games like Word Zapper, Towering Inferno, Commando Raid, Speak and Peek, and Space Jockey. Is Speak and Peek, you think, like hide and seek, Sam?
Maybe. Yep. Towering Inferno seems to be a licensed game based on the movie Towering Inferno.
Maybe.
That's cool.
Okay, some news updates. There was a version of Monopoly called Playmaster that had from the people who created the most popular game of all time comes the Monopoly Playmaster, an electronic accessory designed to enhance without changing gameplay. The Playmaster speeds up the game by electronically rolling the dice, auctioning off unowned property, and lending money to encourage earlier property development. It also provides,
sounds like it'll speed up the game.
It provides musical accompaniment by playing I've Been Working on the Railroad.
I love it.
It plays the opening bars of Beethoven's Fifth when a player has to repay a loan. Oh my gosh, it's so good. Okay, they got a big new arcade game from Sega from the folks that brought you Zaxxon. The first coin-op game with realistic three-dimensional effects comes Sub-Rock, a natural sequel. You know this one, Sam?
I'm aware of the game. I've never seen an environmental cabinet for it.
Yeah, it's an amazing looking environmental cabinet there.
Look at the bent plastic on the window so you can watch the people playing while they're playing.
Yes.
It has a big Sega logo on it. I don't think that exists, but it's really cool.
I don't think it was
really
ever
cool
actually. They had the address for Sega back then printed here for some reason. Okay, a comical catch-all. This is such a strange story. This is just a news story about what's happening in games right now. Learning to run computers can be frustrating at best. The first time you irretrievably lose a very important top-secret file that you simply can't reconstruct, you feel capable of murder. You want to throw the computer out and you curse a lot. But half the fun of cursing is having whoever you're cursing at curse back.
What?
Computers could never do that until now. Randy Simon of Don't Ask Computer Software in LA has given the gift of the expletive deleted to computers with his program Abuse. Abuse, says Simon, is an interactive insult program compatible with both the Atari and Apple computers. The computer has, quote, an evil memory chip of its own and will respond to whatever insult you type into it with one of its own 5 million stored insults. So next time you hurl an epithet at a defenseless computer, don't be surprised if it comes back with something cruel like, oh yeah, well, your mainframe wears army boots. I'm pretty sure Johnny Five said that in Short Circuit several years after this.
Are we reading the origin of like online toxicity for games? Like, is this the origin story? Like,
maybe. So it's just an app that you type an insult into and it'll insult you back.
Yeah, I mean, in early Word, in text adventure games like Zork, when you type in swears or insults or anything, the game will actually respond to them. It'll say something like, such language for an adventurer as yourself or something like that. And so I think this was the logical extension. I love that little picture of baby Pac-Man up in the
Yeah, that's a strange story. It says, the reason Pac-Man is here, it says, although we still don't know how many Pac-Men can dance on the head of a pin, we do know that 112 Pac-Man lookalikes can dance on the tread of a Firestone steel-belted radial 721 Metrix tire. That's the official count from the company. It seems that a tread design engineer at Firestone discovered that 112 different tread element locations on the new tire resemble Pac-Man.
Cool. Fair
that's
enough.
Cool.
I guess that's how ubiquitous Pac-Man was at the time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely in 82. That was the year.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie Does Atari. Some adult-themed games coming to Atari at the time. Don't need to delve too far into that. We'll save that for GameScoop After Dark. So this is they have like a question and answer section, but they put the answers before the questions for some reason. It says why the answer and then the question. Because we here at Electronic Fun think the answer is most important. So it comes first. Well, that's kind of confusing.
Well, okay, but the way they structure it, like the answer is absolutely not.
Yes, yep.
So it's like, but what? We don't know the question yet.
I know. I like this one. Lisa wrote in to say, generally, I play video games by myself, so I use the left joystick. My question is, when I play against another person, will the person using that left joystick have an unfair advantage because the left joystick is broken in?
Okay.
It's fair. They said no, though.
Valid.
This is for you, Sam. Robert writes in to say, I just bought a computer and I noticed that the floppy disks look something like 45 RPM records. Should I carry them the same way I carry my 45s with my fingers in the center hole and my thumb at the edge?
Oh, that's adorable. That's a bad idea, I think, with floppy disks, because that's where the magnets expose. Yeah.
They say absolutely not.
No.
Never touch the smooth surface.
That's really cool. Yep. What a cool question. But you should hold your 45s that way. Never touch anything but the inside of the edge.
Yep. Paul writes in to say, I think it was very smart for Coleco to make that adapter so you could play Atari cartridges on the ColecoVision system. But I have an Intellivision. Why doesn't somebody make a system that plays both Atari and Intellivision games on it? Why doesn't Wild West.
I'm mind blown by that. That's like, can you imagine like Sega releasing an adapter and being like, hey, you can play Super Nintendo games now on your Genesis.
Yeah, the Coleco was all over that. Intellivision had such a different controller that they would have had to like map that in a funny way to like the D-pad and a button. They could have done it though. They probably did do it, but I don't know. Those systems are pretty different. Coleco and Atari are systems.
John wrote in to say, I've heard something about Play Cable. If I am a cable subscriber, can I get it? And do I need to own a game console in order to play the games? So this is the answer. Remember, this is 1982. Yes, there is such a thing as Play Cable. And yes, you do need a video game console in order to play the games. Play Cable is a 24-hour all-game channel available to cable subscribers all over North America at a monthly fee that is less than the price of a cartridge. To play the games offered, users must own an Intellivision system, which is hooked up to the TV by a special adapter that comes with the subscription. The service offers users 15 Intellivision games per month, a combination of new games, returning games, and standing favorites. So it was PlayStation Now or Xbox Game Pass back then over cable.
In the early 90s, Sega did this.
I know, but this is like 10 years before the Sega Channel.
10 years before. It's unbelievable.
I just can't. How is it possible?
Night Stalker.
Yep.
It's one of the games.
Finally, I love this one too. Clifford wrote in to say, I play video games like a true fanatic, and no matter how well I do, I ultimately lose to the computer. Are there any video games that I can win?
Well, that's true. Back then, you know, the games didn't have endings.
So they say the answer is yes. Airlock by Data Age for the Atari.
One of them.
Is at least one game we know of which can be beaten.
One game.
Zork.
Also Zork.
All the games, you can only beat one of them. Enjoy just losing to all the rest.
You could beat Oregon Trail back then.
This is an ad for Firefighter, and Rick Colby thought he was hot stuff until he played Firefighter. It's just a kid who looks like he stuck his finger in the electric socket.
Wow, these are so 90s looking to me. It's really funny.
Maybe in the 90s, they were just nostalgic for the 80s. Video games, are they killing rock and roll? According to the New York Times, the huge popularity of rock music may be over, and one of the main reasons is video gaming. Last year saw 55 million fewer records sold than the previous year, and the summer was one of the industry's worst ever. According to rock promoter John Scheer, only 4 of the 14 concerts at New Jersey's Asbury Park Convention Hall made money this year, and the only groups that can fill a giant stadium now are a small handful of very, very big acts, the Rolling Stones, The Who, and Bruce Springsteen. Blah, blah, blah. I think people are just staying home and playing video games instead of going to rock and roll concerts.
That's hilarious. Or going to the arcade, right?
Yeah. And then here's another one. Are you a video jock? Are you the leader of the pack? Why not find out for sure by calling the Twin Galaxies International Scoreboard?
Cool.
Twin Galaxies was conceived by Walter Day and is dedicated to the proposition that all game players are not equal. In order to prove this, Mr. Day is erecting the world's largest scoreboard, an 18-foot structure that will be made up of one huge screen and 12 smaller screens. The TVs will retrieve data from a computer on which arcade and home game scores from across the nation will be stored.
Cool.
Still exists today, but on the internet.
Is that in Iowa?
Yeah.
Is it?
Justin, you should go. Let us know what it's like.
Okay.
I'm sure it's only 6 hours across Iowa or something insane.
There's so much good stuff. I know we're running long on time. There's so much good stuff in this issue. The quote of the month comes from it's a random quote from a random person. Steve Rojowski, who's a computer consultant in Albany, he says, all you have to do is watch a kid at an arcade run out of money. He really goes into glucose shock. He runs around. He tries to borrow a quarter from somewhere. He just has to have that next fix.
I mean, I see that every weekend at Free Gold Watch.
It's bleak.
But it's like the meme of
where are the parents?
It's like the meme of
get this kid out of here.
Nobody was asking. And Steve's like, all you have to do is watch a kid at an arcade run out of money. What else do we need to hit? The ColecoVision ad. This is an ad for ColecoVision, and it's got like the console and some information about it. And then some arrows are drawn on the ad. And then there's a letter from Bill to Dad. The letter says, this is the system we've both been waiting for. ColecoVision has everything. It plays the best arcade games. It looks and plays just like the real arcade, and it plays the most arcade games. It's got a plug-in attachment that will allow us to play all of Atari's games. P.S. And look at this, Dad. ColecoVision is also a computer. And that's important because, you know, I don't want to just play games. Could we go to the store and take a look? And Bill, I want to say, I don't know how old Bill is, but he has just exceptional cursive handwriting.
That's immaculate.
It's immaculate handwriting.
It's better than mine.
Much, much better 100%. Than mine.
That's because Bill grew up in a time in which there were no video games, and he learned to write. And then by the time there were video games, he was already a great penman writer.
I guess so, yeah. And the whole feature on games going Hollywood.
And I guess about home games. That's interesting. Not the arcade ones.
They have a profile on some. The 20-year-old Mark Turmel is the industry's hottest designer. Does that name ring a bell to anyone? Mark Turmel?
No. Mm-hmm. What game does that show there? Yeah, I guess their home version.
Fast Eddie. It was all like Atari and VCS games, I think. So Fast Eddie, he did. Beanie Bopper. Worm War. Sneakers.
I love those design docs. Those are incredible.
Yep, those are cool. Vectreking. Yep. Are you tired of having to share the TV with people who want, of all things, to watch programs instead of playing video games? Do you want to play arcade quality games in your room, your friend's room, or someplace where you won't be annoyed by A, your parents, B, your kids, C, your baby brother who drools on the cartridges, or D, your sister who always wants to know what you did with her Clash album? If you answered, oh God, yes, to any or all of the above, have we got a system for you? It's an all-in-one game system with its own TV screen, an arcade-type control panel, arcade memory and graphics chips, and 12 cartridges, plus one resident game.
Whoa.
And it only costs $200.
A resident game, like a pack-in game?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
It lives inside
Mindstorm.
Yeah.
It's Mindstorm, and it looks like it's just a knockoff of Asteroids, and that's it right there, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
The Vectrex is the real deal. The games are awesome. It looks amazing, and it's controller's really cool. Like, everything about it's just amazing, and kids that had that at the time would be very happy, because it was like the arcade. There was nothing else like it.
This would have been a cool spread to see back, because there's an Atari ad and then a Vectrex ad, full page added like back to back to each other. And then why Atari is number one, and then introducing the system chosen 2-1 over Atari and Intellivision for real arcade gameplay.
You see what you're seeing there for Vectrex 2 is there was a piece of plastic as an overlay that you put over the black and white monitor to add color to certain areas, including like score numbering and stuff like that, which arcade games did too. But yeah, it's a black and white vector.
The $200 question, which game system is right for you? There's a questionnaire you can fill out to see available home console is right for you.
Yeah. And then smoking?
Yeah. Okay. So this is, I think, an interview with the voice of Pac-Man in the cartoon. But like this guy, this is the voice of the actor. But what's weird is that they have images of Pac-Man here that are not from the cartoon. They weren't able to get images from the cartoon at all, apparently. Instead, they have images of Pac-Man sitting on a chair smoking a cigar.
It's great.
Look out. And it says, look out, Saturday morning TV. Here comes Pac-Man-imation.
And you see what's happening? It's like Pac-Man's supposed to be like an actor in a chair.
Yeah.
Yep.
Being interviewed.
Shooting the breeze in an interview in 1982. Yep. Obviously smoking.
Yep.
What was that record, Ed?
It's weird and weird. We have something every video game player must have, and it's yours free. Mindscape. It's the hottest record in the video game world. It's yours now, and it's free at all leading video game retailers.
What?
You heard right. We brought together a top-notch science fiction writer and one of Hollywood's best sound engineers to collaborate on a listening experience that puts you right inside Data Age's video games. Sam, how badly do you want to hear this record?
I do. It looks like it's a EP, a 7-inch EP. I'll find it.
Some sort of a promotional material for Data Age's games that was going to be free at shops that would get people to buy their games.
This is like pre-order bonuses back when pre-order bonuses was like they give you like a soundtrack CD or a demo disc.
It's a flexi disc.
Yep.
There's 7 for sale for $3.
Oh, you found it already?
Dogs. Yeah.
There you go.
He's
a gorilla on
it.
Your table, a gorilla on your table, and a pocket dungeon. They have, or a pocket dragon. They've got the Donkey Kong, the sort of mini arcade tabletop that's very well known, was ubiquitous. But then there's a Mattel, like a Game & Watch Dungeons & Dragons game, which sounds pretty cool.
Oh, I would love that. That's
same
so
here.
Cool.
I'd be so down for that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. It only cost $23 back then.
What a deal.
Now you can tell the difference between Intellivision and Atari with your eyes closed, because Intellivision has the Intellivoice voice synthesis module.
It's an expansion module. Yeah. Look at the size of the system compared to it. It's huge.
And you should look up, especially Sam, but everyone, Scoop Nation, listen, just look up Intellivoice on YouTube to hear some of the voice samples. They're great. They're fantastic.
Would you like to hear a song about railroads?
It's 10 times worse
I've
than that.
I've been working on the railroad.
They have a feature on the next Atari 5200. That would be a big bomb. Oh, and then they many years before game Scope came out, they have a Name That Game feature where they show a little screenshot. And if you can name all the games, you win prizes.
No, there's no such thing as an original idea.
Yeah, what I'm learning is here. There's the only video magazine you need, and here's GameScope 20 years
before. Look at Ladybug in the upper left.
I only knew Ladybug and Pac-Man. The others... Maybe, yeah.
Well, there's Breakout, Breakout.
Is that just just vanilla Breakout? Yeah,
I believe that's the one level of Gorf there. Mm. There's like a knockoff of Space Invaders. It's probably something else, though.
Oh, and then that's number 7 is Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, it's Raiders. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
6 looks like Missile Command or something.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a level in another game. It's definitely a Missile Command clone, but I think it's a level in another game. I think it might be from 4. But...
Mm.
4 looks fucking cool. What is that?
Number 4, I don't know that. There's big sprites on there.
I gotta look that one up.
There's a whole profile on Robotron. That was the hot stuff in arcades at the time.
One of the best games ever.
Go back to Robotron.
Yeah.
That guy looks like Steve Jobs. I'm sure it's not.
No, that's, you know who this is. It's
well, it's the guy that designed Robotron, right? Games. Yeah.
I'm trying to find his name.
They don't have his name mentioned in here that I can find. Anyway,
that's fine. We can move on.
Indiana Jones and You're Living on, this is the review section, but they don't think they liked it very much. They gave it only 2 joysticks out of 4 or 5. Room of Doom is a good game. Empire Strikes Back.
Eugene Jarvis. That's who it is.
Eugene Jarvis. Gotcha.
Ah.
Empire Strikes Back got 4 joysticks. Communist Mutants from Space. That's a Space Invaders like. It was good enough to get 3 joysticks.
Colorful.
Sword Quest, Earth World, Fire World. They reviewed that one, Sam. So is that the one that came out? Was Ocean World the one that didn't come out?
Yeah, right. There's one of those. I've seen those. I've definitely seen Sword Quest.
Mega Mania only got 3 joysticks, but I really liked that one back in the day. And then Microsurgeon, I've only ever seen that screenshot of it.
Screenshot.
But it looks so cool.
It's on the cover of the game too. It's so perfect.
Yeah. Look at that art.
It's really good. Yeah.
Demons to Diamonds is cool. I played that.
Good name. Demons to Diamonds.
Hopefully a bunch of these are going to be in the, there's Gorf.
Yep.
Hopefully a bunch of these will be in the Atari 50 collection.
I know. I'm excited for that. A meeting of the game minds. And what's interesting about this is they've gathered, prominent people in the game industry to talk about what's coming next. And would you believe none of them are able to predict that the industry is going to crash in just 12 months? $99 computer. We take the TS-1000 for a test disk drive. I cannot believe there was a $100 computer in 1982.
Like the Raspberry Pi, right? Yeah.
Insane. And that's about it. There's an ad for Mega Mania on the back of the issue. And that is a look at the premiere.
An ad that looks like the cover of a Choose Your Own Adventure. Choose Your Own Adventure. Yeah. It looks so good.
I know.
By the way, the New Yorker had a profile on the creators of the Choose Your Own Adventure books, and it's like really long and in-depth and interesting from a couple weeks ago. Check it out, New York. It's really good.
Those books are back.
Yeah.
I know those were some things that got me reading at a young age. I love Choose Your Own Adventure. Like that was those are my jam.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Sean Marshall in Vancouver, British Columbia. Data, this is just regular 20 questions, but you have an advantage. You know it's a video game. You have 20 yes or no questions to guess this game. Let the questioning begin.
Also, you need to know that we've been on a losing streak.
Is that true?
So it's up to me. Is what you're saying. I'm here to save the day?
I think instead of saying it's up to you, you can blame us.
Okay.
did this game come out in a year that started with 1-9?
Yes. Yes. And you only have a 2-game losing streak, Sam.
Yeah.
That's a streak.
All right.
I wish you would have asked, does this year have the numbers 1 and 9 in it? And then we would have just gotten so thrown off by 2019.
Could have been 2019. No, we know it's a 70s, 80s, or 90s game.
All right.
Okay. I mean, is this a 90s game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did this game have multiplayer?
No.
Okay. Did this game first come out on a cartridge?
Yes.
Did this game first come out on 16-bit cartridges?
No, it's 5.
Okay.
Same question, 64.
What, did it come out on a 64-bit cartridge?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I hope it's not a Jaguar game.
There's not a whole lot of 64-bit cartridge systems, but there are several.
I'm going to go ahead and assume it's a Nintendo 64 game. We don't need to burn a question on that.
Is this a game developed by a Nintendo first party studio?
No.
Was it developed in Japan?
Yes.
Ooh. It's probably Castlevania 64. Love that. What was Capcom doing in the N64 era?
They adapted Mega Man RPG Legends or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Single player. We know it's a single player game.
In Japan. Is this game part of a series?
No.
Whoa. No.
One off Japanese 64-bit.
Could be Quest 64.
Oh, yeah. Is this game?
Love Quest 64.
Well, let's just ask them. Is this an RPG?
No. That's 10.
Rip.
Okay, so it's not an RPG. It's not. It's single player. So that leaves us with like action adventure, puzzle potentially.
Racing sports.
Racing sports. I doubt sports. I don't think we got many Japanese developed sports games, right?
There's like extreme sports games.
True.
Like, yeah, you're snowboarding and whatnot.
Just I mean, the thing about the N64 though is that, like, you know, the PlayStation was just, it just trounced it. Like all the N64 game, like memorable ones, were Nintendo games, right?
Yep.
Like,
well, we don't know if this was an exclusive, but it did come out in the cartridge first. It's weird. Should we make sure it's an N64 exclusive, or is that not needed? We just probably figure out what the game is.
Could also be like Resident Evil. So we did get a Resident Evil on the 64. Right?
It would have to be a specific Resident Evil because
oh, was well, he's, we said it's not a series. We also said well, it's not yeah, a series. Yeah. So, yeah, Resident Evil's out.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time thinking of that many Japanese made N64 games that are one-offs that that weren't made by Nintendo. that weren't part of a series. Like, you know, I keep thinking of like Western, you know, like we had Turok whenever it was like a month ago, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
What about Sin and Punishment?
Ooh, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good one.
That is a good one.
There is a sequel. Maybe. I don't know. Actually, I don't want to throw that out there.
I think there was a sequel, like, for the Wii, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, or it was a remaster, one of the two.
Yeah,
or that was 3DS or something.
Star Successor or whatever it was called. I may have made that up. That might not be a thing.
Do we drill down? What are we at, 11 questions?
I mean, we can drill down by... We can drill down by company or by like genre. Or
yeah,
like,
that's
know.
What I was going to say.
I think I could ask, well, how about this one? Do you shoot a gun in this game?
If you do, that's not the main mechanic.
Okay. But what is the main mechanic, Damon? I don't think you shoot a gun in like in Tetrasphere.
Yeah. I mean, technically, like, I think there's like a Puyo puzzle. Pop on the 64 that technically
yeah,
like shoots.
Bottle. Us to move.
Yeah, they're all part of series.
Oh yeah. Did they get was there a lot of like licensed games that came out of Japan developers back then?
Did we ask if it was licensed already?
We didn't.
That's a good question.
Is it a licensed game?
No.
I guess that'd be part of a series in some way. Let's see here. If we're like really off and it's like not a Nintendo 64 game.
Yeah, we would be in trouble. It could be like Tempest 2000 for the Jaguar or something.
Damon, was this game well received?
By some outlets and people.
Should we
That's
burn?
A very strange answer.
Should we it's just a strange answer. Should we just burn 64? Like is it a should we burn that like console?
I'm going to assume that it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at, too, but...
I also don't know that there are that many, like, Japanese-made Jaguar games.
Good point. Japanese, single player, you don't use a gun.
Because I'm thinking about, like, I'm running through, like, mascot platformers in my head, and a lot of them, you know, there's, like, Rocket, Robot on Wheels, and all these games, and they're all, like, made in Europe or America.
Yeah,
like, I'm having a hard
like,
time thinking...
Yeah, because, like, Gex wasn't Japan based. That was on the 64.
Guns appear in the game and you could do something that could cause a gun to fire, but like that's not like the main mechanic. It's not what you do most of the time.
I wonder if there's a I mean it sounds like not part of a series makes this really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Should we ask about 3D? It's probably a 3D game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ask, could there be 2D games?
I can't even think of a 2D game on the 64. They're minus like fighting games, but we know it's a single player experience.
That's right. So it's not a fighting game. And racing, you would think there would be multiplayer. Probably not that. Puzzles, you'd think there'd be multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. I think that leaves us with and we know it's not an RPG. Mm-hmm. So at least
it's like an action adventure game. Kind
of. Yeah. I think that's where we're at. I think it's an action adventure, Japanese developed, single player.
Is the company that made this game still in business making games today?
They are. Well, they're still in business.
It's a Konami game.
Yeah. Could it still be Castlevania? Have we eliminated? No, because it's not part of a series.
Yeah, what else were they up to on the N64 era? Like I said, I have this like weird
thinking of
blind spot in my memory of like what the Konamis and Castlevanias or the Capcoms of the world were like up to back then.
I think Konami's obviously making games. They make collections.
Yeah,
I mean, they outsource them.
Mm-hmm. When I think of platformers on the 64 that weren't like Nintendo owned, I've got Glover, Gex. There's Quest 64, but we know that's RPG. That's an RPG, actually.
Is there like a Bushido Blade type game on this, or like a ninja type game? You know, something like that.
I think,
or like Tenchu, like all those games are on the PS1.
Yeah. Yes, like that. I don't know. Maybe we can go by era. I don't know if we're gonna get this one. Do you play as a human in this game?
You play? No, that's 15.
What?
All right, so we're not a human, so we're some type of creature.
It sounds like it's not like a god perspective. It sounds like a robot.
Maybe it is Rocket Robot on Wheels, and I'm just wrong about who made that game. That's like, there was this weird, it's a weird platformer. Like, I don't know why it popped into my head. And now I want to know what you play as. Do you play as a robot? Like, or an alien?
You can ask.
Well, but that's like, what he's just going to say, no, you don't play as a robot. Then I'm like, great.
Ask it. We got nothing.
We could ask, like, is, do you play as something organic? But I mean, I guess that's kind of the same thing. Organic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't want to say, do you play as something alive? Because then we'll get robots rights activists all up in our mentions.
And you'll get you trip up the vampire exception.
Yep. Vampires, zombies, skeletons.
Is this a spooky game?
No.
Okay.
That eliminates all of them.
Ask the robot question. Or the organic one that Jada had. Jada, you can ask that.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
Do you play as an organic character?
No.
Okay. All right, so we're synthetic.
So Chibi Robo was out for GameCube, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that was GameCube.
Probably a sequel to it.
Okay. So you play so either you play as like nothing, like, you know, you're just it's abstract,
mm-hmm.
or you play as like a robot.
Mm-hmm.
Or
a mechanical vehicle of some sort. That's
wasn't there.
Space Station Silicon Valley.
What about shooters, Justin?
Wasn't there this one where you played as this like yellow like robot, but like it was like a mech. Like you played as this like yellow mech. I can't remember what it was. I remember seeing it on the rental shelves though.
And you might be thinking of Body Harvest, but that was made by a European company.
I think so.
Yeah, and Space Station Silicon Valley was made by a European company.
Damn it.
Or it was made by Rockstar. You're right.
Wow, we're really tripped up here. This is crazy.
DMA design.
And you don't shoot as a robot. So it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
But you can shoot.
Or you can cause a gun to fire. Maybe it's Bomberman.
I don't think Bomberman.
Series.
Yeah. And I don't think Bomberman had any guns you could shoot, if I remember right.
It's got bombs. It's
got cannons, I guess, technically, I think, in some of the like the single player levels. But this again, series.
Seems like it's gonna be a really hard one.
Damon looks at us like I can't get a read off of him either. He's very good at mm-hmm. his poker face.
Poker face is incredible.
The poker face is so good.
Let me think of
You got two questions and a guess.
Oh, really?
The company's still around.
Japanese owned.
It can't be like, how great could the game be if they didn't go on to like make more of them?
Yeah, that's.
Why do some people like it, but others didn't?
No, I was going to say Jet Force Gemini, but that's a lot of shooting in the guns.
Yeah, it's made by Rare.
Yep, and it's Rare.
What about like, well, okay, never mind. That was stupid. I don't know. I don't have it.
Yeah, I don't think we'll go.
We need to come up with some Hail Mary guesses.
Do we want to ask maybe like about like power-ups or items or anything like that that might help?
We mentioned the game yet.
That's true. Yeah, I think we're at that point.
All right. Secret weapon. Have we mentioned this game yet?
No.
And we're not going to.
No. But the developer is still around. Like, I feel like our last Hail Mary should be to try to guess a developer.
Konami, right?
Yeah, Konami, Capcom. You know, we always forget about, like, you know, like Tecmo.
Hudson, like Natsume.
Yeah. What was like some of the first? What were some of the very first?
Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
That's single player. Oh, that's part of a series. Gosh darn it. That series is tripping me up.
Is there a Harvest Moon where you play as a robot?
Oh, that too.
You don't know. You don't know. You'd be a cow milking robot. No way to know.
That's true. We make an assumption that a lot of video game characters are human presenting, but we don't ever get to see their insides.
Shall I reveal, or do you want to?
That was a
you can reveal it.
There's a show Westworld about that.
Jada has any other questions?
Does this game have 3D graphics?
Okay. Yes.
Hey, yes.
Any guesses?
Playing as a robot.
No guesses. We're done.
Maybe you play as a god.
If I may, I think maybe in the future when you know it's a Nintendo 64 game, trying to nail down the release window might help, because in early on there wasn't much, and this is an early Nintendo 64 game, published by Nintendo but developed by Treasure.
Oh damn! Treasure, it! I asked developed by Nintendo.
Which is still in business, but has not published, released a new game since 2014. Right. And this game is Mischief Makers.
I know that game.
FD platformer.
Wow. I've never heard of this, but that looks awful.
I've played Mischief Makers. I am so sad.
IGN gave it a 6, but other outlets gave it, you know, in the 8s. And then, the you know, Sean, who wrote in, said he has a lot of great memories of playing it. I think a lot of Nintendo 64 owners just didn't have much to play at this time, so they were.
Yeah, did you play it, Damon?
I think I may have rented it, but I remember it getting kind of like lukewarm press coverage, so I wasn't super excited about it.
Yeah, this was a rental
so ugly,
for me.
I love it.
And the whole mechanic is you're a robot. You're a robot maid trying to rescue your master, and. Yeah. The mechanic is you grab things and shake them, and then sometimes that can cause like missiles or bullets to fly out of them.
That's hilarious.
Mm. Yeah.
There was never a sequel?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Didn't perform well enough, I guess.
And it wasn't the sequel to Mischief Maker?
No. No. First Treasures make a lot of, they made, you know, Gunstar Heroes and Dynamite Heady and then Ikaruga and Bangayo, but like, they just, I don't know what they do today except just port Ikaruga to whatever the newest platform out.
That's where they make their money. Yeah. Ikaruga's fire.
I'm pretty sure this is a 2D game, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's 2.5D. The game is 2.5D. Are we not looking at 3D polygons here?
No. I don't think so. I think it's a Donkey Kong like.
Yeah, the game being polygonal isn't like, it's like you can't move on a Z axis. Like.
Well, that's why we've run into trouble with that 3D question.
Yeah.
Yes, that is why we've run into trouble with that 3D. Anyway,
you should ask,
continue.
If you want to ask, like, can you move the camera around in a 3D environment? Maybe that would help.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're never going to remember any of the tips you've given us to solve these.
That's fine.
Because I don't even know the name of this game, so that wouldn't have helped anyway.
Mischief Makers on Nintendo 64. Thank you for the suggestion, Sean in Vancouver, British Columbia. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for Video Game 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jada, for joining us this week. Thank you, Jobert, working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. Game Scoop will return next week. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.